It is a Friday morning here on Robin Hood Radio. The week has gone by rather quickly after that start, where we received in Northwest Connecticut anywhere from 10 to 24 inches. In southwestern Massachusetts, they received up to 30 inches of snow. And in the Hudson Valley in Newark, they received around, somewhere around a foot of snow. But we made it through that. And hopefully at this time of year, all that snow will be gone by next week. One guy who didn't have to worry about snow is David Terachuk. He wasn't with us live last week because every year he heads out to one of the most interesting conglomeration of people, I think, that happens. And David, welcome back to the Media Beat here on Robin Hood Radio.
Well, I'm glad to be joining my fellow media watcher again, Marshall Miles, as I return to the media capital of the world, New York City, after, yes, you're right, an extensive field trip to the media extravaganza, which is the South by Southwest Conference and Festivals in Austin, Texas, where, by the way, it was 90 degrees. It was a hot week. Well, mornings were cold, but by the time 2 p.m. came around, it could be very hot and very sunny. But we were indoors most of the time. And the first thing to say about my trip to South by Southwest this year is that mainline world news did have its impact on this sometimes insulated event. It's devoted very concentratedly, after all, to just digital geekery, movies and video, plus music too, of course. The impact coming from the bigger world outside was inevitably the news of Silicon Valley Bank's collapse, which was followed, as we know, by waves of anxiety sweeping through other bigger banks, most notably internationally Credit Suisse, based in Switzerland, which is now, of course, getting rescued by the country's central bank. And here at home, the First Republic Bank is the next medium-sized bank to be provoking severe jitters and some rallying around by other banks in a rescue bid. But I actually went to a finance session at South By, and nobody could miss the chilly wind of bank collapses blowing through the big conference room there. The session was intended to be, well, I mean, it ended up being so, but all along it was intended to be about finding so-called angel investors for tech startups. And of course it was startups who had once upon a time been turning in their multitudes to SVB, the Silicon Valley Bank, for financing. This session was led by an archangel, if you like, among angel investors, David S. Rose, who's a big investor from here in New York. In fact, his money has helped a lot of startups in this city's so-called Silicon Alley, as opposed to Valley, in those tiny streets downtown that hum with little and not so little tech companies. Rose confessed during this session that it was planned to be co-hosted with Silicon Valley Bank, but obviously SVB's downfall had changed things somewhat. Rose had to read a statement put out by him and his fellow venture capital groups, nearly 700 of them signed onto it. On their behalf, he said, and I'll quote, "The events that unfolded over the last 48 hours have been deeply disappointing and concerning. Silicon Valley Bank has been a trusted and longtime partner to the venture capital industry." And then Rose added an apparent flourish of optimism. He said, and on behalf of this 700 groups of angel, potential angel investors, in the event that SVB were to be purchased and appropriately capitalized, we would be strongly supportive and encourage our portfolio companies to resume their banking relationship with them. Well, we'll see about that, huh? I mean, I know that the Biden administration is making a big effort to find a buyer for SVB's American operations, and across the Atlantic, one of Britain's biggest banks, the historic HSBC, historic in that it was once the imperial-sounding Hong Kong Shanghai Banking Corporation, has already taken over all Silicon Valley's UK operations. They had quite a few. You see, the thing that you certainly have reinforced on you in South by Southwest is that tech people are, of course, optimistic by nature. And this room that I was in for the session, it went on several hundred startup people there and would-be startuppers to engage eagerly with Rose's explanations and advice on how to find funding for your big idea. Everybody has a big idea. But it was interesting, though, at its least, to hear how much Rose emphasized the importance of what he called bootstrapping for growing your own company. In other words, if I can be a little crude in my phrasing of this, go fund yourself.
Yeah, that's it. What I find so interesting about that conference is, it's started. It's so much diverse now, in what's discussed and what goes on there. You've got you sent me an article that's really interesting, and it's going to be on the Media Beat a website. The world's disaster call for dedicated responses, but what you hit on here is a chef that feeds hungry people, millions of people, all the time. David, you there?
Yeah, I lost you.
Okay,
You
where'd
were
you
just
leave?
about to turn to another subject about South by Southwest.
Okay, I'll go back there again.
Okay.
I want to see what happened with my internet there. Hang on a second here. Okay, here we go. One of the things I find interesting about South by Southwest, and you have interviewed a chef, which I've seen interviewed on TV numerous times, that he's a world famous chef, an incredible chef, but one of his main things is that he feeds people that need help.
Absolutely. This was Jose Andres. He's been called a celebrity chef, but I can't find another better phrase for him. But he's gone on from that to get elevated to the status of global humanitarian hero figure. And that's what he represented when he came to Austin. He's much more famous than the angel investor. But he had a and he obviously has a great following. Filled another room much bigger than the previous one I was mentioning. And there was one phrase that echoed around that room coming from Jose Andres. They don't want our pity, he said. They want our respect. He was talking about his countless beneficiaries across the world, his rapid reaction World Central Kitchen, which you mentioned, his work for 13 years now to set up feeding stations for the hungry in crisis-ridden countries, repeatedly responding to emergencies as various as the recent Turkey-Syria earthquake, and of course the ongoing war in Ukraine. The session he led was called "The Stories We Can Tell Can Change the World." That's wording aimed, I suspect, at the media critic and all of us. And Andres was not giving a speech. He doesn't do that so much. He doesn't like to make speeches. But he was interviewed on stage by a Washington Post, not a correspondent, a columnist, Michelle Norris. You'll know her, of course, Marshall, as the longtime NPR network news host, first ever black woman to fill that role. And Norris herself is no slouch when it comes to social action. She founded the Race Card Project, the racecardproject.org, all one word, a dialogue-provoking forum online aimed at combating racism. It's some measure of the audience that is drawn into South by. That's the usual the nickname for the whole conference, which is too many words to really use in full all the time. It's some measure of the kind of audience they get that the Andres Norris conversation generated two standing ovations in a vast space seating 2,500 people. So the message that was coming out from their session was a sort of clarion call, really, that often comes from tighter and nimbler organizations like World Central Kitchen, firmly distinguishing themselves from the huge and, frankly, often staid international behemoths like the UN's World Food Programme and the Food and Agricultural Organization. And I should make full disclosure here, I've worked with both those UN divisions at various times. But Andres was jumping off from the striking achievement that his kitchen had already provided 3.5 million meals for the quake-battered communities of Turkey and Syria. And when Michel asked him how he was able to do it with his nimble, I think was the word they used, nimble organization, he said something quite simple, really, in a way. He said, "Big problems sometimes have very simple solutions. What we've been doing," he said, "is just putting boots on the ground, and one meal at a time is how you start hoping to change the world." He also talked about his inspirations. He asked, what a curious moment. He asked his mainly young audience, South by Southwest's audience seems to get younger all the time as I get older. He talked about his inspiration, what people knew about his inspiration, Clara Barton, the Civil War nurse who went on to found the American Red Cross. But he got back in response only some bemused silence. People didn't really know who she was. And later on, he didn't even try to explain who Robert Everett might have been. That's New York's Welsh American abolitionist, pre-Civil War. But he did cite him as another inspiration. And as you say, I did sit down and did my own interview with Chef Andres after the session, and Robert Everett's insistent advocacy came up again. The chef was wrestling, like many aid workers have to, with that very familiar but disquieting trope, rich world, white knight, rescues poor world denizens in distress. The phrase was this. He said, "Philanthropy can seem to be about the redemption of the giver, but no, philanthropy must be about the liberation of the receiver." Good, strong message there.
This South by Southwest event breathes some fresh air into the stale regular media that we have to talk about and cover. And I hate to have to break away from it, but there's been a lot of things outside of the bank crisis. We now have Russians shooting down our drones, which are of course in international airspace. Poland is now going to send jets to the Ukraine. It's a breath of fresh air that you have to leave and then go to these stories.
Well, I cover the media, and the media is certainly buzzing with those dimensions of the Ukraine war. Poland breaking ranks with NATO and actually doing what the Biden administration is anxious not to, which is to get more involved actively in the war. They're sending their fighter jets. And of course, that chilling sort of echo from the Cold War of the drone being shot down by Russian jet fighters. It's more evidence, I think, that it is a replay of the Cold War in many ways. And like the Cold War, mercifully, I hope we can still err on the side of optimism, like we would do in South by Southwest. That there can be direct talks between the defense secretary on our side and his equivalent on the Russian side to try and defuse the very, worrying development that being argued about between the two sides. At least they're not doing what for so much of this war has been done, just kind of semaphoring through the media and through stories given openly on the American side and the American administration side, and more sort of sneakily by the Russian side, I have to say, but messaging that fills the media of both blocks, if you like, to use a Cold War phrase, but at least the equivalent, modern day equivalent of the red telephone that worked between Moscow and Washington, was brought into play again, and the defense secretary could speak to the other side, and if not exactly clear the air, at least sort of calm the frenzy that threatened to build up over this issue.
Something that I'm not sure a lot of people were aware of, but for the past couple of years, I've been trying to track down 2 tons of uranium that were missing inside of Libya.
Yeah.
To everybody's, I think, feeling great about it, they found that in Libya, and they were trying to verify what was found. But that shows you the type of danger that we live in, where that can be floating around, and imagine what havoc that can cause with any of these small splinter groups.
Absolutely, and while I was pointing out that there are many groups on the ground that can say things about United Nations agencies like the World Food Programme and the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN, when we were talking about food earlier on, that there is a United Nations agency which does some extraordinary work, often very nimble. And that's the International Atomic Energy, excuse me, the International Atomic Energy Agency. Awkward initials there, but I'll say it in full because it makes more sense to do that. But yeah, they could find the missing uranium, and so. They have a similar responsibility in Iran, which is difficult to perform that responsibility, since Iran is erratically cooperative. Sometimes they are cooperative, and sometimes they certainly are not in allowing inspections. But there's an agency which is getting its work done, and in Libya, as we know, what a chaotic situation they have to cope with there. A government that is really in control of very little of the country that it's meant to be in control of, and constant divisions and inconsistencies prevail throughout. And yet, in this case, the UN agency was able to cut through it all and do their international job.
And just one other thing, we all remember the riots that we saw in France when Macron put forward some economic policies. And once again, now protests are flaring as he now has forced through the pension reform that they've been talking about.
Yeah, he came in as a modernizer. That was his platform. He was going to modernize France. And that's, I guess, what he's doing. And one of the uncomfortable bits of modernization is that in France now, as you get older, you're no longer going to be able to have a somewhat cushy kind of retirement that other countries somewhat envy, or at least the older workers in those countries are rather envy. You could retire at 62. But now, an extra 2 years is going to be added to your working life if you're a French worker. And as you say, people are protesting, but Macron is forcing it through all the same. And it although the label applied to him is modernizer, in some ways, in terms of social policy, it looks like a massive step backwards. There was a time when people had to work until they dropped, and one of the great virtues of societies that appreciate the need for social welfare. We have a situation now where we're going back in time, and the retirement age has now gone up. But essential for the economy of France, argues Macron, and he seems to be winning his argument, at least by sheer force of political strength.
Well, now that you're done with the South by Southwest, anything else that that you've gleaned since you've come out of there about the future of media? Because
Well, I mean, I can talk about short-term future. I can talk about movies you're going to see, because one of the things about South Valley is that it does provide you early view of films that we can all enjoy eventually. There's a local hero in Austin, Robert Rodriguez. He of films of varied genres, from the splatter, I think is the technical term for his kind of movie. Certainly in the pair of movies that he made with Quentin Tarantino called Grindhouse. But at the same time, he was capable of making the family-friendly fare called the Spy Kids franchise, a fourth movie immediately available, not quite finished, and that was unusual in South by Southwest. He showed an unfinished movie called Hypnotic, and it's I shouldn't really be reviewing an officially still incomplete film, but I'll give advance notice that in the summer, we haven't got an exact date yet, but it'll be playing in 2,000 theaters across the nation, and it's a powerful mystery tale, full of truth-warping twists and surprises. It stars Ben Affleck, looking suitably drawn and haggard as a detective who's also the father to a missing young girl. That's the plot line. But there's lots of extraordinary visual tricks that will engage people, I trust, and it's kind of a crowd-pleasing movie in the end. And that reminds me, if we have time to slip in one more reference to coming fare in the film area, possibly my favorite medium as a media commentator. The film festival's biggest, the big closing movie that they end with this coming weekend, Saturday night, in fact, it'll feature another bit of Ben Affleck work. It's his work as a director this time, a movie called Air. It's the story of the basketball giant Michael Jordan and the sporting goods firm Nike and their development of that iconic sneaker, the Air Jordan. Now, that has all the elements, I would suspect, of a crowd-pleasing South by movie. They'll be cheering again in the Paramount Theatre, I imagine.
All right. Well, I want you to rest up because we've got a lot ahead of us over the course of the next week.
You bet. I'm a little exhausted by South by, as people always are. I'll take a rest, but I'll be up and at 'em again next Friday with you.
All right. You'll find David, of course, online, themediabeat.us, and right here on Robinhood Radio. David, we'll speak to you next week.
Look forward to that.